maybe just my first like staff meeting there, right? So it's the end of training week one, everybody's in the conference room for a staff meeting, and I start to like realize I can't understand these people. I mean, I know we're
Oh.
speaking English, but
Welcome to the Talking Shop podcast, where I'm here to share stories, lessons, and experiences in sports performance and professional development. I'm joined by Dr. Jordan Troster. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thanks.
So he's the Director of Performance and Sports Science at the University of Oregon. But before I share more about his background, tell me something good that's going on in your life right now.
Oh man, we had a beautiful string of sunny days the last couple of days. So here in Oregon in March, if you can put a few of those together, that is good. Yeah, for sure.
This spring weather, I drove with my windows down to work yesterday. It was like 57. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so good. But if this last winter has taught me anything, weather definitely affects moods. Like, yeah, it's nuts.
It's all about perspective. My wife's from Southern California, so the bar is set pretty high,
Oh
and
man.
she still is shocked that people would live in any other way. So, yep, it's all about perspective.
Yeah, growing up north of Chicago, I think it's prepared me for probably most of many other places I could go. So,
Hey, yeah, you've got it covered. Nothing's off the list at that point.
but Dr. T at Oregon now, but he spent time with the Las Vegas Golden Knights as well as Rugby Australia, probably his biggest stops along the way. So he's been all around the world, literally in all different levels of high level elite sports. So we got connected through a mutual friend. We've had a Zoom call previously. Super nice guy. I said, "Hey, I'd love to hear some of your stories," and being the nice guy that he is, he said, "Let's do it." So, anything I missed about your background? If not, we will get into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So, what is the biggest kind of fork in the road story looking back that if you were to have taken a left instead of a right, things probably would be completely different?
Yeah, this was an interesting one to think about because I feel like I've had a dozen forks in the road at least, and they're all pretty major. My wife and I talk about in just the, almost 10 years that we've been married, we feel like we've lived five different lifetimes, right? Whether that's, single in one location, overseas, having kids, moving again, they all feel very different, like completely different lives. And a lot of those have been, not chasing, but following different career opportunities. When I think about, kind of that biggest or first would really just be getting into, the field of performance in the first place. I was a football player in college and, I loved training. I wasn't a very good player, but I liked training, and studied kinesiology and had no clue what I wanted to do with my life. The only examples, sports science didn't exist at that point, but the only examples of, working in performance was, my strength and conditioning coach, whom I love and still communicate with to this day. But my perspective was always that he lived a pretty miserable life, like, 12 to 14 hour days in a dungeon weight room with no windows. And I thought, well, I like this stuff and I've studied it and really enjoy it, but I know I don't want that as my life. So I ended up just looking for jobs and actually worked for a railroad in a like graduate or postgraduate management training program. And so I did a year working for the railroad, and learned, it was interesting because I learned a lot about myself through that experience. The biggest thing was that maybe it's just the way my mind works, but it's really difficult for me to separate what I'm doing for work and the rest of my life. My mind just keeps churning on things, solving problems, chipping away at things in the back of my head. And if I can't turn it off, I should probably be do doing something that I enjoy. And so after about a year of that, I was fortunate enough to, take a detour and get back into performance. One of my former strength coaches was a part of a, a physical therapy clinic slash, youth athletic development slash personal training, and yeah, gave me my first job and got me into things, and it was a good opportunity to learn from some good people early on, and all the rest is history, as I guess they say. But yeah, had a lot of random turns, and none of it was really planned, but yeah, fortunate to have found myself where I am today. So
That is a first. I've never heard of anyone working for a railroad company.
It's wild. Like, yeah, it's an entirely another world.
And I feel like most coaches have that experience of, I needed training to be successful. And then consequently, you learn the value of it and the impact that it can have. And then the first moment of like, wait, there's like, you can do it with rhyme and reason. You know, it's not just like push, pull legs. Because I walked on at my school and I wasn't athletic enough. Like, I needed training to be successful. And that's why I was successful. And I was like, wait, I could have been doing this way, way better. Yeah. So it's interesting how it plays out.
Yeah, well, it was interesting for me. I mean, I studied kinesiology, but it was a very academic focused program as opposed to having much applied content. You know, most of the people in my program were going on to, you know, like pre-med type of directions or PT school or, you know, any number of things like that. And so I got great foundations in anatomy and physiology and biomechanics and things like that. But, and then obviously had my experience as an athlete training. And had moments where the dots maybe sort of connected, but not really beyond like, oh, your serratus anterior is this muscle. And like in this exercise, you can see it working, right? So it wasn't until I actually got into coaching and had a chance to learn from people who are around me that like, oh, the whole picture of like program design and exercise selection and, you know, progressive overload and stuff like that started, like, that's the stuff they actually don't teach you, you know, in a generic kinesiology program, but are the foundations, you know, for actually performance and coaching. So it was interesting to, yeah, have the academic experience, probably the personal, like athletic experience, but then not until later be able to put those pieces together.
I always say my internship ruined the last 2 years of my undergrad because so it was in between my sophomore and my junior year. And the rest of my 2 years of classes, I was like, that's not how it works in real life. Like, that's just not, you know, so I think it's valuable to have the formal background because back when the CSCS, you just needed a degree, not a relevant degree. A coworker of mine, she had her accounting degree and she was like, what's a motor unit?
Yeah.
And like, we were kind of chatting about stuff like that. And she just like chimed in. She's like, whoa, that's like really interesting. Like, how'd you learn about that? I'm like, I was like, Kines 101.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you bring up an interesting point. You know, it's changes in the industry as a whole, but you'd be surprised at the number of coaches who have business degrees or whatever. And yeah, it's especially, you know, yeah, the way the market forces drive coaches into higher positions these days. Not everybody has that fundamental background of exercise science, which I think is actually really, really valuable. So I'm always a big proponent of, ways that we can make that accessible to people who got in early or people who maybe got in a little bit later and need to catch up. So
definitely valuable. And I don't want to steal a future story if this is a future story, but I would assume another fork in the road, as you alluded to, was deciding to work and live literally across the world. So if we could kind of chat on how that opportunity came to be, what the decision process was like, because obviously over there, they do way better stuff. So,
well, I don't know about way better, but they've been doing it for a lot longer. That's for sure. Yeah, that's another massive fork in the road. I guess the story is I was living in the Bay Area. So I'd moved up to the Bay Area, coaching in a private training facility, met my wife there. We got married. You know, two incomes, no kids, but still like the Bay Area where we're like, how do people survive here? And it became like apparent that this wasn't a long-term solution, right? We're not just gonna, you know, we loved it there. We had the, you know, great life, but at some point it just doesn't make sense. And so a lot of our friends were moving away and we decided, you know what, we're going to have to move eventually. Let's do it now. And we didn't have anywhere to go, but we wanted to travel. So we both quit our jobs, put all our stuff in storage and just traveled. So we probably spent, about 7 or 8 months traveling just around the world. And during that time had a connection. Some people from Australia, some coaches had come over and were, you know, on kind of a professional development trip, and it connected with them. And, you know, through a random conversation, they had an opening. One of their strength and conditioning coach was leaving, and just happened to be one of those situations that kind of worked out. Had I not already, you know, quit my job and packed up all my stuff, it's not something I would have probably been open to or considered. But yeah, like you say, fork in the road. That was an unbelievable experience. So, and yeah.
You probably traveled the world for 7 months on 2 months rent in the Bay Area.
Oh, exactly.
That's, probably saved some money doing that.
That's exactly it. And when you're young enough, you'd be surprised what you can put your body through and your mind through when it comes to traveling and making decisions about, you know, sleeping in hostels and riding overnight buses, you know, through Turkey instead of paying for a night's hotel and things like that. So yeah, it's kind of like a mini retirement. You can actually do a lot more when you're young, because you can, you know, push yourself a little bit harder than, and you have lower standards, I think, than when you're older and you get a little more bang for your buck. But yeah, it was a lot of fun.
What was the coolest stop on that journey?
Man, there's so many. It's really hard to choose. I think one of the coolest places I visit, I always come back to, is Switzerland, and place I want to go back to. It's just unbelievable. Yeah, definitely want to go back there. So that was a unbelievable place, but so many other just amazing experiences as well. So,
and last question kind of on this topic, and then we'll move on. Having spent a decent amount of time in Australia, kind of in their model and stuff, what's one thing you think that they do really well that the American model can kind of learn from? And what's one thing that you think America does better that Australia could learn from?
Yeah, I've had conversations about this quite a bit in the past, actually. So the high performance model, you might hear that word thrown around, right? And that's what people are trying to do, is create a high performance team, or, you know, integrate a high performance model. And whether that originated in Australia, I don't know, but it's definitely something that they've gravitated towards and taken hold of. And I think something that they just have the time and experience to execute relatively well. And when I say high performance model, it's, you know, a buzzword that doesn't have a lot of meaning behind it, but I think it ultimately means an environment where practitioners from, you know, different silos come together to solve problems. And it'll legitimately be, an open forum where coaches, athletic medicine staff, strength and conditioning, sports science, the general manager, whoever, can sit around a table, and everyone has an equal opportunity to contribute their expertise to solving a problem or answering a question. And there's not the operation in silos that's common here, or the, you know, there's always going to be people who think that their way is right, but they've been doing it long enough and the expectations are established enough that no, you don't always just do what the coach says. Like, the coach does what other people say in their realm of expertise just as much. And it's just a structure where that's the expectation and that's the norm. And it's pretty, it's just a really unique experience to see that in action. Mm-hmm. So I always thought that was really good. And obviously there's just a history of sports science there. They've been doing it for decades. So it's integrated. Coaches expect it, athletes expect it. It's not something crazy and new when, you know, you ask them to fill out a survey or wear a device or perform a test. It's all just pretty normal. On the other hand, I think one thing that differentiated me over there was, I think, just a coaching ability. That sounds strange, but and there's probably benefits to it as well, but I found a lot of strength and conditioning coaches over there had a very hands-off approach, in that they wouldn't run a session the way a coach in North America would, particularly at the collegiate level, right? At the collegiate level, like, you are running a session. Mm-hmm. It may be planned to the minute, like all the pieces are designed perfectly. Over there, you may have a great coach who like slaps out a workout and like maybe chats up the guys, or maybe kind of stands in the corner and watches as the players go and execute their workout. Again, that's at the professional level, where maybe there's a little bit more autonomy. Like, that makes sense in some regards. But I think there's a massive opportunity to create a training environment that, that motivates people, that gets the most out of them, that teaches and educates them like during that process. So you may have great programs, but the execution, I thought, maybe that's a point of difference that I brought, having experience in North America. So
interesting. Yeah. And I bet like the first few sessions, you're like, is he supposed to be coaching right now?
Well, yeah. Or I'd go visit other clubs and teams, and I'm kind of looking around and like, who's in charge here? Like, what's happening? Which again is kind of cool. If it's a very autonomous, like loose, easy environment, there's an element of that that's interesting, but I think it could be an opportunity to, some low hanging fruit as well. So,
yeah, cool. So next we will move on. So sounds like there's a few opportunities that you could pull a story from, but the coolest or craziest story that like you literally couldn't even make up if you tried, like the story you always tell at a bar when you tell people you're in like high performance sports.
Yeah, this is a hard one. So many of those stories probably are unrelated to coaching or training, is the reality of them. And this is a hard one. Again, I probably go back to just the whole experience for me of working overseas, which is part career related and part just personal, the experience of living overseas. So that's, I think, the coolest, craziest kind of experience for me. And what sticks out to me then within that are just a few surreal moments. So like day one, just walking up to the training ground and seeing like their training facility had, giant rugby posts outside the front door. And it's like, this is it. The first day of a new job. I think, anytime you're either like leaving an old job and have your car packed and headed out of town, or like pulling up to a new job on the first day, there's just that surreal kind of feeling. And so that was on a whole nother level. Just a great group and training environment. Like first couple of weeks I was there, we'd have, preseason Saturday conditioning sessions, and we'd be in a park underneath the Harbor Bridge in Sydney, like the opera house is across the harbor, and we're doing, some conditioning stuff. And so, yeah, unreal experiences like that. And then one of the craziest things probably is maybe just my first like staff meeting there, right? So it's the end of training week one, everybody's in the conference room for a staff meeting. And I start to like realize I can't understand these people. I mean, I know we're speaking English, but all of a sudden we've got, 10, 12 people in the room between like rugby terminology that I'm not an expert in, Australian accents, and just their abbreviations or lingo or maybe locations that they're referencing. I'm missing 50% of what's going on in this meeting. And I'm like, this is wild. So it took a little while, but eventually I could hold my own when it came to the lingo, and I could understand what was going on around me a little bit. But yeah, that was pretty unique for me, that entire experience.
Do you remember the first time they like kind of asked you to chime in, or the first time you asked for like kind of a recap, or you like admitted that you were kind of lost?
Oh man, it was left and right. I was like, wait, what does that mean? And they're like, oh yeah, that's this location. And ultimately they were abbreviating the name for some place that unless you knew what they were talking about, you wouldn't have a clue. It was a wild experience. Mm.
And then what was your favorite kind of hobby or thing you tried or place you went? Like I know they surf a lot out there, like something kind of like that you picked up that you wish you could keep going.
Yeah. Well, I guess living over there was a great opportunity to travel in that side of the world as well. So New Zealand, Malaysia, Vietnam, like Indonesia, all those types of areas are really cool places to visit. And then obviously a lot of places within Australia. So that was great. Lived, a 10-minute walk down to like just an unreal beach. And so the lifestyle is, when you get off work and come home and like walk to the beach and have a swim and then, you know, come home and have dinner. Like, that's, again, it's like people live that way. They do that every day. That's pretty unique. So that's probably the thing that I miss the most was, yeah, being near the ocean and having to swim every day and things like that. So I didn't get into surfing. Like I tried a few times and hey, maybe I need some more practice and probably a good teacher, but I just didn't pick it up.
You could probably sports science your way into teaching yourself how to surf, just get some sensors and get hey,
Hey, talk about like, spots in the world. Australia has, it's called, Surfing Australia, their national governing body for surfing has, a training institute on the Gold Coast. And it's like, you're at the beach and you train surfers all day. And so there's some people who have posted up on that job for a while and there's some cool spots.
I bet. So next, last kind of biggest question. So the biggest kind of full circle or the thing that you're most proud of or something that it kind of took a few years for it to kind of come to fruition or like just the thing that you're most proud of?
Well, so again, it's kind of just goes into forks in the road to some degree, but I guess I would say just finishing a PhD when it comes to that. And I don't know if that's full circle, but, and it ties into my experience in Australia as well. Like I never anticipated, you know, doing a PhD or certainly going down an academic route in any regard, but, essentially working in that environment and had questions about, you know, some testing and assessment I was doing with my athletes and got connected with a university that had a sports science department kind of located within our training ground area and started talking through, you know, the questions I wanted to answer and had an advisor who, you know, worked me through that process and said, well, you know, let's do a research study where you're already working here and have access to athletes. Let's collect the data. Let's, you know, read the literature and understand the background. And so I always joke with people that, you know what, it turns out if you publish a handful of studies and write, you know, a couple hundred thousand words, they'll give you a PhD. In fact, they'll give one to just about anybody. It was something I probably have to credit my wife for pushing me down that road as much as anything, but it was an unbelievable experience to just put in the work, go through the process of answering my own questions, and putting a framework around what it takes in order to do that and developing the skill sets from, literature, understanding literature, assimilating that, collecting data, developing research methods, the data management, statistical analysis associated, and then like just putting in the hard yards of scientific writing, I suppose. But it was something that I never would have anticipated or, you know, pursued necessarily until the opportunity came along. I was in the right place at the right time and was able to put in the work to finish that. So
having done my own thesis and getting that published, it is a process that seems unnecessarily complex, but the legitimacy of just like going through all of that, it's definitely not for the faint of heart. But what is the title of your dissertation and give us your sales pitch on kind of your justification and why it's valuable?
Oh yeah. So yeah.
Bring back the PTSD.
Yeah. Right. So my dissertation is postural control measures of neuromuscular fatigue in professional rugby union. Again, this talk about full circle. At the moment, I was interested in understanding neuromuscular fatigue. We play a game on Saturday. The guys come in on Monday morning and, you know, traditionally you do a counter movement jump test, for example, to have, you know, an objective measure of, you know, their neuromuscular system and what their outputs look like. Practically for me, it's pretty hard to get guys to give a great honest effort on a maximal output counter movement jump in the morning on a Monday morning after having played a rugby game, you know, less than 36 hours prior, right? But that's the most important time practically to understand where they're at, because ultimately we're trying to plan training for that afternoon and understand like, okay, these guys, we need to modify their training. These guys are probably good to go. And you can always use subjective measures and any other number of things. But I had available to me force plates with some balance and stability measurement capability. And so looking through a little bit of research, there's relationships between postural control or balance essentially and fatigue. And it's like, all right, well, maybe they don't want to do a jump, but they'd be willing to stand on one leg with their eyes closed for me on a Monday morning, right? It's not very physically demanding.
Simple.
They don't have to psych themselves up for it. Maybe I can improve compliance and eliminate that motivation factor by exploring this alternative measure. And so that's the that's the road that I went down. Not exactly groundbreaking or world-changing type of stuff, but and then all the different elements of ultimately answering that question. What's interesting is this was, probably I kicked that process off in 2015 or so. So we're a good number of years later, and I had some early conversations with Dan Cohen, kind of before ForceDex was ForceDex at the time, around developing some of those balance measures, which Valve actually just released in one of their newest software. So they have those same balance measures that I was investigating years ago are now available. So maybe some people will actually be interested in seeing if they correlate with fatigue now that they have them available. We'll see.
Fantastic. And it's definitely super relevant, as you described, like fatigue and seeing where they're at is important, but some of the confounding variables, limiting factors would be the motivation, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, it's simple. It still measures what we want to measure, and I can get better numbers on it. So I think it makes total sense.
That's where my head was at. Made sense to me. That's what I always say.
And that's all that matters for sure. So although I do love the stories, lessons, the experiences, you know, that I always see the X's and O's bring us together, but like when it comes time to reflect and whatever, like it's never really about, oh, my squat got to this or whatever it may be, but we are still practitioners and we still have to do our jobs better. So if you could offer one question that the listener could put on a sticky note on their mirror, if it could be like a reminder for every Monday morning, Friday morning, whatever it may be, to help get their brain going, or help them just get better, what question would you offer?
Yeah, I just had a conversation with someone earlier this week and kind of reminded me this as well. It was a kind of a young up and coming coach / sports scientist asking for, you know, advice and, you know, what books should I read? What skills should I develop? And I said, you know what? It depends. It depends on your environment and what it's going to take to make you better. And I got this piece of advice from someone years ago. I wish I could attribute it appropriately, but came down to like, oh yeah, like what books do you recommend? And it's like, I don't recommend any books. I recommend you first, like take some time to reflect and think about what's the one skill that's going to make, or that's going to allow you to help your athletes better, or to improve your organization. Like, so take your time and reflect and identify that one skill, and then go find a way to educate yourself and improve yourself in that area. I think in this field, it's really easy. It's become more and more easy just to fill yourself with content that comes at you, whether that's the newest book that's released or just the training videos or research excerpts that come across Twitter, and your Twitter feed becomes your continuing education, as opposed to taking the time to reflect and actually decide for yourself, what's that one thing that the people around me need to make them better? How can I be a better coach by meeting their needs? How can I be a more impactful part of my organization by meeting their needs? And then going and finding what that is. That's kind of my one question for reflection every day is, what's the one thing that you can learn that's going to make a difference in your athlete's performance or the impact of your organization?
Yeah, it's changing the mindset from stuff to skill. And like, it's not how many studies or how many books, or it's like, what am I going to do on a daily basis, or what skill can I work on here that will help me in the next job that I want to get that I can work on? And that does take reflection, and it does take a little bit of mental effort and kind of sifting through, well, what do I do on a daily basis? What am I not the best at? Well, what do I want that future role for myself to be? And it does take some time to figure out kind of those answers to those questions, but then it almost takes the guesswork out of like, well, what do I do today? You know, if you have this crystal clear box of my opportunities here, what I'm missing, what I want my future opportunities to be, and like this skill. Yeah, what skills are marketable or important? I think stuff versus skill is a huge, huge mindset shift. I feel like that'd be super valuable. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a part of my research experience as well. And met my transition, if you want to call it that, from a strength coach to a sports scientist, if there is a difference, right? Was probably at one point I was pretty intimidated by like research, right? You know, it's you're at the level of you see research articles, you read abstracts, you kind of work your way through the methods, and that's the extent of it. And yeah, it's the Twitter feed infographic level of sports science knowledge. And as a result, people like you just get what comes to you. And so going through a structured research process, I think one of the important skills for anyone to develop is understanding, like when you have a question, there's 100 people out there who have done some vetted work towards answering parts of that question. And if you know how to go about going and finding the most important pieces of that body of work, you can get yourself really far down the track. But it takes a targeted approach as opposed to just, you know, absorbing the snippets of whatever comes at you. So I think that's something that's potentially missing for a lot of practitioners.
Especially with social media nowadays, even if you find those key pieces of kind of content, you probably can get access to those people, or at least the ability to send them a message. And then of course, like you have to push and they have to pull you in. But it's interesting. I was on someone else's podcast and they were asking me like, what, you know, content do I recommend, or books or podcasts or whatever. And I was kind of like, I don't really like listen to that many podcasts or like really read them. Like I've more like half read books on my bookshelf than I like care to admit, as I just outed myself. But then I was talking to my mentor about it the next day. And he's like, you probably consume the most content of anyone. Like you talk to so many people. You know, I would say like I unironically network. Like I literally intentionally say hello to people and chat with them and hear their stories, and whether it's recorded or not, like we met through other circumstances, but I like chatting with you the first time and I'm enjoying this the second time. But like you can either read the book about what you want to learn about, or you can talk to the author about that, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, the access is unrivaled from, you know, what it would have ever been in the past, for sure.
So go from skills to, or stuff to skills, and go from book to author, you know?
Yeah,
and
there you go.
And you apply that mindset shift from 3 months to 6 months to like a year, and oh my gosh, you know, that could be extremely valuable. So super cool for sure. So last thing, I'm now going to roll the red carpet out for you to shamelessly, emphasis on shameless, plug whatever you got to plug. Where can we get more of Dr. Troster, and where can we expect to see you next?
Yeah, maybe that's the toughest question, to be honest. I'm not on social media too much. I unplugged from whatever that looked like however long ago. Maybe I actually need somebody to help me build a brand or get on Twitter or something like that. So it's not hard to find me. You just have to look me up and probably send me an email is the best way to do that. I will share just some of the projects that we're working on here because they're interesting. And if there's people out there who connect on those, I love to chat. A couple projects we've got going on right now is looking at college football game demands. There's surprisingly little published on the game demands of college football, especially at a play-by-play analysis sort of level. So we've got a pretty interesting project going on there. We're also digging into the change of direction space. So really influenced by JB Marin and force velocity profiling types of concepts, and trying to apply some kinetic measures to change of direction along those same lines. I know Damian Harper has a lot of great work on deceleration, but putting change of direction into the mix. I know 1080 has put a lot out there recently as well. So yeah, we've got our radar guns and we're working on a few projects related to that. Beyond that, I'm really passionate about just the education and career development of young sports scientists and trying to look at what that could mean for us here at Oregon, potentially launching a fellowship in the coming year and things like that. So those are some projects I'm working on. Yeah, find my email and reach out. And yeah, always happy to chat with people.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for your openness, your time, for sharing some cool stories. And I look forward to chatting next.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Matt.